Psalm 55. To the chief musician with stringed instruments, a contemplation of David. Give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplication. Attend to me and hear me. I am restless in my complaint and moan noisily because of the voice of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked. For they bring down trouble upon me, and in wrath they hate me. My heart is severely pained within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fearfulness and trembling have come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me. And I said, oh that I had wings like a dove, for then I would fly away and be at rest. Indeed, I would wander far off and remain in the wilderness. I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and tempest. Destroy, O Lord, and divide their tongues, for I have seen violence and strife in the city. Day and night they go around it on its walls. Iniquity and trouble are also in the midst of it. Destruction is in its midst. Deceit and guile do not depart from its streets. For it is not an enemy who reproaches me. Then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me who has magnified himself against me. Then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my companion and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked to the house of God in the throng. Let death seize them. Let them go down alive into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. As for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. He has redeemed my soul in peace from the battle which was against me, for there were many against me. God will hear and afflict them, even he who abides from of old, because they do not change, therefore they do not fear God. He has put forth his hands against those who were at peace with him. He has broken his covenant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. Cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved. But you, O God, shall bring them down to the pit of destruction. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. In our conference sessions, we have been looking at some of the painful emotional experiences that a believer may go through. This psalm shows us David going through another painful emotional experience. I've called this message Nowhere to Hide. When David wrote this psalm, he felt trapped. He was in a situation that was too much for him. He felt hemmed in on all sides. There was no way he could escape. He wished he had the wings of a dove. He says in verse 6, "Oh, that I had wings like a dove, then I would fly away and be at rest. I'd wander far off and remain in the wilderness." All around him are complicated problems. All around him there are people who cause him grief. He wishes he could leave them all behind. He wishes he could fly off into the wilderness, where he could be alone, where he could be far away from all the problems, far away from all the stress. I have a friend, a pastor, who has sometimes joked to me. He said that one day he will start a new missionary society, and he'll be their first missionary. He says he'll call it the UIM, the Uninhabited Islands Mission. He feels that he wants to go off as a missionary to an uninhabited island, an island where there are no people to give him trouble. David felt like that. He felt he couldn't cope with problems any longer. He just wanted to run away. Perhaps we've all felt like that at times. Maybe there's a big argument in your family. Everyone is shouting. Everyone is shouting at you. Everyone is saying, "You must do this. You must do that." This uncle rings up. "You must rebuke your brother." Your brother rings up. "You are to blame. You must go and speak to our mother." Your mother rings up. "Your grandfather is angry with you. You must try to please him." You just want to escape from it all. You don't want to be involved. You wish they would all be quiet and leave you alone. You wish you could go to a place where there were no telephones. Or maybe you work for a busy company where there's always pressure. This customer wants your attention. This customer says, "I was first." This customer says, "I placed my order a week ago. I want it today." And the boss of the company is telling you to do one thing, and your manager is telling you to do something different. And the people who work under you are coming to you with all their complaints. And the inspectors are blaming you because this rule was not followed. Everybody seems to be shouting at you. Everyone seems to be blaming you. Everyone is giving you orders and asking you questions. And you just want to tell them all to go away. Or you want to go away. You want to say, "I'm leaving." You want to go somewhere where nobody can shout at you. You wish you could go and live in a tent out in the wilderness. But David felt like that. He was suffering from stress. Now, many different situations can make a believer feel like that. What was David's situation? We see it in verses 9 to 11. Started in the second half of verse 9. "I have seen violence and strife in the city. Day and night they go around it on its walls. Iniquity and trouble are also in the midst of it. Destruction is in its midst. Deceit and guile do not depart from its streets." David lives in a city where there were many violent people. There was strife in the city, conflict, different groups fighting, arguing. During the day and during the night as well, there were gangs of people prowling round the walls of the city, planning evil. There were many people in that city who hated David. David talks about them in verse 3. He talks about the voice of the enemy. He talks of the oppression of the wicked. For they bring down trouble upon me, and in wrath they hate me. David had many enemies in the city who hated him. But these enemies did not attack David openly. David says in verse 11, deceit and guile do not depart from the city. People were plotting against David secretly. When they spoke to his face, they pretended to be friends, but their hearts were full of deceit. David knew that everywhere in the city there were people whispering about him, discussing him, asking, how can we get rid of him? Perhaps sometimes he walked into a room and there were a group of people talking to each other. When they see him, they fall silent. They've been saying things they don't want him to hear. Everywhere he goes, people are watching him. Secretly, people hated him. There was one man, more than all, who was David's secret enemy. David speaks about him in verses 12 to 14. This man didn't attack David openly, but secretly he reproached David. He criticized David. He spread lies about him. David says in verse 12, that if it were an enemy who reproached me, then I could bear it. David wasn't afraid of an open enemy. David was a man of war. David could face Goliath. But this man smiled at him, then worked him harm. David didn't know how to deal with such a man. David couldn't prove that this man was harming him. This man did everything in secret. This man had been a very close friend of David in the past. David says, it was you, verse 13, a man my equal, my companion, and my acquaintance. This man was David's equal. Perhaps he was one of David's own family. And he seemed to be a believer, a godly man. In the past, David and this man often worshipped together. In the past, they often talked about the things of God. Their conversation was sweet. David says in verse 14, we took sweet counsel together. We walked to the house of God in the throng. David and this enemy had a covenant with each other. David speaks of it in verse 20. David and this man had made solemn vows of friendship to each other. But now he says this man has broken his covenant. David can't trust him. But this man's deeds are all in secret. He's not done anything wrong openly. David can't attack him or accuse him in court because it's all secret. So stressful. David must meet this man. David must talk to him politely. David must keep his temper. David must be careful to do nothing wrong himself. And yet he knows that this man hates him and is working against him. David describes the man again in verse 21. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. When David meets this man always smiles, always talks gently, always acts in a friendly, warm way. But the thoughts in his heart are thoughts of hatred and war. He would gladly kill David. He used his soft words like swords. He wanted to use them to destroy David. What could David do? You say, well, David could confront him. David could say, I believe you are planning evil against me. But this man would pretend to be so shocked. He wouldn't admit it. He'd say, oh, David, my brother, I'm so sad that you say such a thing. David, how can you think such evil? Aren't we both men of God? He'd cover his hatred with smooth, soft, lying words. David can do nothing. He can't defend himself, for the attacks are in secret. He can't punish the man. The man has done nothing wrong openly. He can't confront the man will only lie. What can David do? How can he escape from this man and from this man's hatred? How can he escape from that city where the people... I swallowed an insect. Your mosquitoes, they sting me outwardly. They've stung my whole body from head to feet, and now they want to start stinging me inwardly. Where's Kenneth? Where's Kenneth? Would you like to get me a glass of water? It would probably be a good idea. Wash it down. You see David's problem. How can he escape from the people in this city? They're whispering against him. They're planning against him. And he's got nowhere to hide. We don't know when David wrote this psalm. Thank you, brother. Maybe David wrote the psalm quite early in his life, when he first came to the court of King Saul. Perhaps Saul was the secret enemy. You remember, openly Saul praised David. Saul gave his daughter Michal to David for his wife. He honored David before the people, but secretly he hated David. He lied about David. He planned David's death, you remember? So maybe David wrote the psalm at that time. But I think he probably wrote it later in his life. I think he probably wrote it when he was king of Israel. The heading to the psalm says, for the choir master. After David had written this psalm, he gave the psalm to the choir master so it could be used in public worship. So it seems that David was ruling the land. He could give commands to the choir master. There were many times when David was king and people plotted against him. You remember the story of how Absalom, David's son, plotted against him? Do you remember how Absalom worked against David? It was all cunning. It was all so secret. This is what it says in 2 Samuel chapter 15. Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate of Jerusalem. Absalom would be there waiting by the road outside the gate of Jerusalem. So whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, Absalom would call to him and say, what city are you from? And he would say, your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your case is good and right, but there is no official of the king to hear you." You see how he lied about David? Men would come and ask for justice from the king. But Absalom would say, "Ah, David will not give you justice. David doesn't care. David won't listen to your case. David doesn't allow an official to act for him." Then Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land. And everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice." You see what Absalom says? "David, my father, doesn't care about justice. But I care. If I were king, how much better it would be for all of you." And, it goes on, so it was that whenever anyone came near Absalom to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. You see, a man would come. He bowed before Absalom because Absalom was the royal prince. But Absalom says, "No, don't bow to me." And he pulled the man towards him and with his hand, and he would hug him and kiss him. You see, Absalom wanted people to say, "Ah, David is hard. David is cold. But Absalom is warm and kind." In this manner, Absalom acted towards all Israel who came to the king for justice. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. More and more people in Israel hated David and loved Absalom. More and more people said, "We want to get rid of David. We want Absalom to be king." David had done nothing wrong. Yet people turned against him. David walked through the city, and people frowned at him, and they looked bitterly at him. Absalom had stolen their hearts. Even David's advisor, his prime minister, Ahithophel, wanted Absalom to be king. Even Ahithophel was whispering against David, plotting against him. Absalom and Ahithophel and others plotted secretly against David for 4 years. And David could do nothing. When such a situation comes, it's far worse than open battle. You have a battle, you win or you lose, and it's over. But this goes on month after month, year after year. You wait, you wonder, everything's uncertain. Your thoughts go round and round. What are they planning to do? What should I do? What if this happens? What if that happens? You can't even explain to other people what's wrong. They may not understand. They may think you're harsh or paranoid. Do you use that word? They may say, "You're paranoid." If David says, "I think Ahithophel is plotting against me," other people say, "No, you're imagining it. You've no proof. You're so suspicious." David longed to escape from this situation. He longed to escape from these people with their lies and their hatred. He longed to escape from the stress and the uncertainty. He longed to fly away like a dove into the wilderness and be on his own. So that was David's situation. He had enemies plotting against him. Perhaps we will never face that situation. But there are many other situations where we feel the same way. We feel that things are too hard for us. We feel we can't cope any longer. We feel we want to run away and hide. But the situation continues, and we can't hide. It's horrible to be in such a situation. David says in verse 2 that he moaned noisily. Often his feelings inside were so strong that he found himself moaning in pain. He says, verse 4, my heart is severely pained within me. I'm in agony inside. I'm hurting all the time. And he says this, the terrors of death have fallen on me. That's verse 4. He doesn't mean he's afraid to die. The terrors of death are the terrors that the wicked feel in hell. David says, I feel as if I'm in hell now. The terrors that wicked men have in death, they've come to me now. He says, fearfulness and trembling have come upon me. Verse 5. There are times when he starts trembling. He has panic attacks. Suddenly he starts trembling from head to foot. His heart state starts racing. It's beating too quickly. He becomes breathless and dizzy. Stress can make a man ill. This situation made David ill. Now, how did David deal with this situation? I want to show you 7 things in the psalm. Number 1, David did not run away. David did not run away. Yes, he wanted to run away. He wanted to fly away to the wilderness, but he didn't do it. He stayed where God had put him. David had been chosen by God to be king in Israel. It was his duty to serve God there, however hard it might be. He had a responsibility to God and to those people. I'm sure that David didn't expect his life as the king to be like this. When David was anointed as king, he knew he would have to fight battles, open battles, against foreign enemies like Goliath. He accepted that. But he didn't expect people who were Israelites to hate him. He didn't expect his own friends and companions to turn against him. He didn't expect people who seemed to be godly to oppose him. David could say now, it's not fair. I never thought it would be like this. I agreed to be king. I agreed to fight foreign enemies for God. But this is too hard. I resign. I'll go off to another country. I'm not willing to be king any longer. It's making me ill. That's what David wanted to do. He wanted to fly away to the wilderness. He wanted to resign his job. But he didn't. He knew God had given him this work. He knew he couldn't resign until God set him free from his duty. Now we must do as David did. Often we want to run away from a situation. Often we want to say, no more. I can't take this responsibility anymore. Well, when we feel like that, we must ask, did God give me this work to do? And we say, if God gave me this work to do, I cannot leave it. Of course, some Christians get into situations where God hasn't put them. Sometimes people take responsibilities for which they're not ready. Maybe they take a difficult position because they're foolish and proud. I know many young men who say, I want to be a pastor, because they think it's a great thing. But the church they attend says, no, you're not ready. You must learn, you must grow, you must prove yourself. But no, they're not willing to listen. They're determined to be pastors. So they go to one church and say, I want to be a pastor. And that church says no, so they go to another church and say, I want to be a pastor. And that church says no. And they keep going until at last they find a church where the people are silly. And say, all right, you can be our pastor. These men haven't been appointed by God. They've pushed themselves into a situation. Then it's better for them to admit how foolish they've been. It's better for them to resign. But when God has given us a work to do, we must never resign. We must never run away, even if we suffer as David suffered. Let me give you an example. A young man began to work in a secondary school as a teacher. He soon learned that he was the only teacher in the school who was a believer. There were two or three pupils in the school who were Christians, but there was not one Christian teacher. This is in the UK. There were 1,500 boys in the school. Nobody was telling them the gospel. Nobody was teaching them the Bible. One day, the Christian pupils came to the teacher and said, we want to start a Christian meeting to be held in the school once a week during the dinner break. We want to invite our friends to the meeting so they'll hear the gospel. But the rules of the school say that we can't have a meeting unless a teacher runs it. And we're very young. We need someone who'll teach us in the meeting and preach the gospel. Will you run our meeting? Will you preach the gospel each week? Well, this teacher thought, I'm not an evangelist. I'm not a preacher. But there's no one else. If I don't do the work, 1,500 boys may never hear the gospel. Is it my duty? Well, he went and spoke to the pastor and the elders of the church and asked, do you think it's right that I do this work? Will the church support me in this work? And there was much discussion. And then the pastor and the elders said, yes, we believe God has given you this opportunity. God has said, preach the gospel to every creature. He's given you the opportunity, so you must do it. So this young teacher began to hold that meeting. He was worried. He didn't think he was a preacher. Yet boys came and listened to the gospel being preached each week. Often when he spoke, he was very nervous. On the days of the meetings, he couldn't eat anything. He had a pain in his stomach every time. And soon problems began to come. Some of the other teachers began to mock him. Teachers who were his friends turned against him. His boss, the head of his department, was very much against Christianity. He criticized him very much. He advised him to stop these meetings. He couldn't force the teacher to stop because it was allowed by the school rules. But publicly he mocked this young teacher. He gave him the jobs no one else wanted to do. He gave him a bad report for his work. This young teacher suffered very much. Many, many times he wanted to give up. He wanted to run away. He wanted to stop the meetings. Maybe to take a job in another school. But he knew he couldn't. He said, I didn't choose to start these meetings. God gave me the work to do. God made the opportunity. God moved the leaders of the church to support the work. It's God's work. I can't leave it. Perhaps God has given you some hard work to do. He's put you into a hard situation. You want to run away. You want to hide. Remember David. He cried out, my heart is severely pained within me. The terrors of death have fallen on me. He suffered physically, mentally, emotionally. yet he didn't run away from the work God had given him. And remember a greater king than David. The Lord Jesus said, "Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" Jesus spoke of the cup of suffering. He knew God, his Father, had given him that cup to drink. Other people said, "No, it's too hard." The disciples said, "No, you don't have to go that way." Jesus must often have longed to say, "I can't drink this cup of suffering." But Jesus knew that if the Father had given him the cup, then he must drink it. The situation you're in, however painful it may be, you must ask, "Has the Father given me this cup to drink? If he's given it to me, I must drink it to the end. I cannot run away." The second thing that David did, number two, David spread out his situation honestly before God in prayer. David spread out his situation. He described his situation honestly before God in prayer. When we are in trouble, when we're in situations of trouble and stress, we usually want to tell other people about them. We feel it would bring relief if only we could tell people. Back home we say that we get it out of our system. Do you have that expression? That when we've told somebody about our problem, we've got it out of our system. We feel better for a little while if we can talk to somebody. But here in this psalm, David isn't talking to anybody except God. Perhaps he couldn't talk about this situation to anybody else. Maybe he couldn't talk about his secret enemy, because the enemy had done nothing wrong publicly. So many people were hating David and ready to attack David. If David had talked about the situation, he might have started a civil war. But he can tell God all about the situation. He describes his own feelings to God. He tells God what's happening in the city. He tells God about his secret enemy and what the enemy is doing. He tells God about the broken covenant and the words that the enemy is saying. He tells God all about the situation. But God already knows about it all. Why should David tell him? Why should David tell him about things God already knows? Because God is our Father. And a loving father loves to hear his children telling him about everything. Perhaps your little boy comes home from school. In school he's learned about some event in history. Let's say he's learned about the Japanese occupation of Malaya in the Second World War. He begins to tell you all about this event. Do you say to your child, "No, don't tell me, I already know about it"? Or are you glad that your child is talking to you? If you're a loving father, you are glad when your child talks to you. Especially if your child tells you things that are hurting him, things that are worrying him, if your child tells you about his troubles. And God, who is our Father, longs for us to tell him about everything, even though he knows it all already. That is one of the reasons why God sends troubles into our life, so that we will rush to him and tell him about them. God wants us so much to talk to him that he sends us these difficult situations. He sends us those situations so that we are driven to him, so that we are made to talk to him. If our lives were easy, perhaps we would rarely talk to God. But when we are in situations of stress, we talk to God much more. And when we do talk to God, then we find relief and comfort. If we talk to other people, then we may feel relief for a little while. But very soon, the worry and the stress will return. For other people can't help. They can't change the situation. They can't give strength. But when we talk to God, we feel relief and it lasts. It continues because we've spoken to the one who can do anything. He can change the situation. He can change us to cope with the situation. Always go to God first. When you are in a situation where you feel stress, don't talk first to your wife, or to your friend, or to your pastor. Talk first to your God. It hurts him if you run off to other people before talking to him. He wants you to talk to him first. Remember, that is the reason why God sent the situation, so that you would talk to him. Maybe after talking to God, you may say, yes, now I ought to talk to Pastor because I need advice to know what to do. Maybe that'll be the right thing then. But always talk first to God. Don't get your comfort from other people. Get your comfort from God himself. Don't get relief by talking to other people. Get your relief from talking to God. Nobody else can give you lasting relief from your feelings of tension and stress. Only God can meet your need. The third thing David did, he prayed many times during each day. You see verse 16. As for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon I will pray, and he shall hear my voice. Sometimes a situation is so big and complicated that we can't think about it all at once. We can't pray about it all at once. We try to think about the whole situation, and we find we can't. We just get confused. David was very wise. He divided up the day, and he prayed about each part of the day in turn. At morning, he prayed. He prayed about the tasks he would have to do during the morning. He prayed about the problems he would have to face during the morning. He prayed that God would give him wisdom and strength just for the morning. Then at noon, he stopped from his work. He thanked God for keeping him safe during the morning. And he prayed about all that he would face during the afternoon. And then when evening came, he stopped from his work again. And he gave thanks that God had helped him during the afternoon, and he prayed for the evening and the night ahead. When we are in a complicated situation, we usually don't have to handle the whole situation at once. We just need strength for the next little task. We need patience for the next conversation. We need wisdom for the next decision. We don't have to sort out the whole situation. We just have to do the next job with God's help. So we come to God many times in the course of the day, asking for help just for the next step. Living as a Christian is often like driving along a road with many bends. You can only see as far as the next bend. You can't decide what you will do after the next bend because you can't see that far. There's no point in worrying about what's after the next bend because you can't guess. All you need is to think how to drive safely to this first bend and how to get round it. Then once you're round that bend, you can think about the next bend. In the same way, God only gives us wisdom for the next decision. He only gives us strength for the next task. He wants us to ask him for help just for the next bit of the road. If we say, God must show me how to solve the whole problem, he doesn't. If we say, I must know how all this will work out, he won't tell you. But if you go to him and say, I need wisdom to make this decision that I have to make now, God will give wisdom for that. If you say, I need to know what to say to this person whom I'm meeting today, God will give us wisdom for that. Fourthly, David reminded himself that this stressful situation will come to an end. I've said already, in each sermon in this conference, that when we are in pain, we often feel that the pain will go on and on. We feel that it will never end. Satan tempts us to think that. But it isn't true. Most afflictions that God sends us are only for a little while. God answers our prayers. He cuts them short. And even the longest afflictions are cut short by death. When God knows that our afflictions have gone on long enough, he ends them. Or he allows us to fall asleep in Christ. And then we wake in a world where there are no more afflictions. At the beginning of the psalm, David feels that the only way to escape the trouble would be to fly off to the wilderness. But when, in the psalm, God has spread it all out, David has spread it all out before God, David remembers that God will cut the affliction short. In verse 19, he talks about the people who cause him so much pain. God will hear and afflict them. In verse 23, you, O God, shall bring them down to the pit of destruction. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men shall not live out half their days. These men who are troubling David may seem so strong and so cunning, but God can cut short their lives at any time. That's what David remembers. We must remember that whatever situation we face, however hard and fixed it may seem, God can change it in a moment if that is best. Think about the schoolmaster, the schoolteacher I spoke of. When he was discouraged and worn out by the pressure, sometimes he thought, This will go on and on. I'll teach in this school another 40 years and I'll always be attacked. I'll always be hated. It's going to be awful and it'll go on and on and on. Satan put those thoughts in his mind. God could change that situation any time, couldn't he? God could change the attitude of the head of department. God could save that man or many teachers in that school. God could move that head of department to another school. God could bring to that school 6 more Christian teachers to help that young man. God could do many different things. God could do greater things than we even imagine. When you're in the situation, often you think, nothing can change. But then we must say with bold faith, God can change this situation today, if he wills. With God, nothing shall be impossible. You're in a very complicated, difficult situation, and you can't think of any way that it could change, that the problem could sort itself out. Do you think it would be difficult for God to think of a way? God could take away the problem today if that were the best thing for you. Fifthly, David remembered other situations which God changed. Look at David's words in verse 9. Look at David's words in verse 9. Destroy, O Lord, and divide their tongues. What does David mean? David is remembering another time when wicked men plotted together. He's remembering what happened at the Tower of Babel. The story is told in Genesis 11. Wicked men planned to build a tower to heaven. They wanted to climb up to heaven and be like gods. They were very powerful, very skillful men. It seemed that nothing could stop them. Even the Lord said, this is what they begin to do now. Nothing that they propose to do will be impossible for them. And sure, there were righteous men living on earth at that time. Perhaps they asked, who can stop these wicked men? They've got so much power. They work together so well. They're in control. But God stepped in. He divided their tongues. He confused their language, and all their plans were broken. The situation was changed like that. And that is why David prayed as he did in his time, Lord, divide their tongues again. What he means is, Lord, do now as you did in the time of Babel. Defeat the plans of the wicked. You change that situation, change this situation. You see again in verse 15, David says, let death seize them. Let them go down alive into hell. Again, he's remembering a situation in the past. Do you remember when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness, how they rebelled against Moses? And it seemed that Moses would be overthrown. It was another impossible situation. But the God opened up the earth, and those men went alive down into hell. Again, David is saying, do now, as you've done in the past, bring a great deliverance, as you did then. David, in his trouble, remembers the past. David says, there have been other situations that seemed unchangeable. But God turned them round, and God can do the same again. When you are in a situation that you can't cope with, when you feel like running away, when your feelings say, give up, then remember many situations where God has answered prayers and rescued his people. The Bible's full of examples, isn't it? Remember Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, thrown into a fiery furnace? Didn't God keep them safe in the fire? Weren't they brought out safely? Remember Peter, lying in prison, expecting to be put to death the next morning? Didn't God's angel open the gates of the prison and break off the chains? Didn't Peter walk out free? Remember Paul, who said, we don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, we were so burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. We felt that we had received the sentence of death. Yet God delivered us from such a deadly peril and will deliver us. Is your situation more difficult than the situation of those men? God changed their situations? Why shouldn't God change your situation? The Bible is full of examples. And church history is full of examples. Adoniram Judson, in prison in Burma, Myanmar. Gladys Aylward walking with the orphans across China with hostile soldiers all around. C.H. Spurgeon accused falsely in all the newspapers. They all said he was a fraud. Didn't God deliver these people? Is your situation harder than theirs? God gave them strength while the affliction continued. And when the time was right, he changed their situation. The Bible is full of examples. Church history is full of examples. And your own life is full of examples. Now you say, the situation I'm in is impossible. Nothing will change it. I've got to give up. I've got to run away. But there have been other times in your life when you had great troubles and you thought they would never end. And God stepped in then. God changed things then. He rescued you then. God hasn't changed, has he? He helped you then when it seemed impossible. Surely he can help you again. Sixthly, David remembers that he cannot be harmed in any way by anything these people do. Look at verse 18. He, that's God, has redeemed my soul in peace from the battle which was against me. David is in the middle of a struggle, a battle. It's a secret battle because the enemies are acting secretly. But David is sure that at the end of the battle, his soul will be brought out safely in peace. He's sure that in the end, he will not be harmed. These people cannot harm him because he's a child of God and God's protection is upon him. And we as believers are sure of that too. Why? Because God in his word has said that he will work all things together for our good because we love him and are called according to his purpose. So every time that people try to hurt us, they finish up doing us good. They finish up increasing our everlasting happiness. You know the story of Joseph in the Old Testament and how his brothers wanted to hurt him and harm him. How they threw him into a pit and sold him off to the slave traders. They wanted so much to hurt him. And yet God took up all the wicked things they did against him and God brought good out of them all for Joseph. And at the end, Joseph said to his brothers, you meant it to me for evil. You were trying to harm me. But God meant it for good. Your evil deeds brought me good. When painful situations come, they are not harming us. They are preparing us for heaven. Those painful situations are sent in order to prepare us for everlasting happiness. when Satan is allowed to attack us. He's trying to harm us. But all he does is increase our eternal joy. Everything that Satan or that wicked people plan against us works for our everlasting good, because God overrules. And then seventhly, after all these things which David has done, I've listed six things, David trusts. It's as simple as that. He trusts God. In the end, that is the only way David can find peace in his stressful situation. He says, I must trust God. He preaches this to other people. He preaches it first to himself. You see verse 22? Cast your burden on the Lord, he says, and he shall sustain you. David talks to us. He talks to all believers everywhere. And he says, you must cast your burdens on the Lord. When there are things that worry you, when there are things that frighten you, you must go to God and you must say, I am not going to worry about this. I am not going to carry this burden. You must carry it for me. There are so many things we cannot change. They're like great burdens we have to carry. David says, give them to God. Say to God, I can't change this. You must work this out. You must sort it out. I leave it with you. David preaches that to himself. David preaches that to other people. And he says, God shall sustain you. God has promised in his book that he will not allow us to be tested beyond our strength. The trial may go on a long time, but it will not go on longer than we can bear. The trial may be very heavy, but it won't be heavier than we can bear. God is trustworthy, and trusting God is the only way to find peace. At the beginning of the psalm, David says, the only way I'm going to find peace is to fly away to the wilderness. But at the end of the psalm he says, the way I'm going to find peace is by casting my burdens on God. Sometimes we daydream. We daydream about that desert island where we'll have peace. But it's only a daydream. It's only a fantasy. That daydream gives us 5 minutes of relief. But it is only 5 minutes. Because that desert island doesn't exist. There's nowhere you can go in this world and be free of stress. There's no job you'll ever find where you're not under pressure. You can never run away from the problems. There is no hiding place from problems in this world. But God is sufficient. If we want peace, we don't fly off into the wilderness. We fly to God. And God is trustworthy. God will deliver his people in the end. When I read this psalm, when I sing this psalm, I feel so often, yes, I know how David felt. I think when the Lord Jesus read this psalm, when the Lord Jesus sang this psalm, he knew how David felt. There must have been times when Jesus wished he could fly off into the wilderness and be at peace. The teachers of the law, they were like the secret enemies in this psalm. They spoke to Jesus sometimes with words like butter. They came to him and said, Rabbi, I've got a question for you. Will you teach me, Rabbi? Will you just explain this point? And all the time they were planning to kill him. To his face they flattered him. Judas kissed him while he was planning to hand him over to be put to death on a cross. Jesus knew what it was like to be surrounded by lying, deceitful people. Jesus knew what it was like to be in a situation that was full of stress. He couldn't hide, could he? He couldn't run away, because it was the work the Father had given him to do. And so Jesus continued. Day after day after day he carried on until his work was done. But in the end his work was done. He's in heaven now. He despised the shame and is now seated at the right hand of the Father. And that is the way we must walk. Yes. If you are in that sort of situation where you just want to run away, David would understand, and I think I understand a little, but best of all the Lord Jesus understands. And he will give you grace to help you in your time of need.